We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
Do you believe that it's been proven that CO2 is the primary control knob for climate? Do you believe that?
No, I think that measuring with precision human activity on the climate is something very challenging to do, and there's tremendous disagreement about the degree of impact. So no, I would not agree that it's a primary contributor to the global warming that we see.
That's EPA Chief Scott Pruitt speaking on CNBC recently, denying that CO2 is a primary cause for climate change. Good afternoon. I'm Tom Krant. Paul Huttner is here now with our weekly climate cast. Paul?
Hi, Tom.
Well, the head of the EPA refuting what I hear you and other climate scientists saying all the time, that increased CO2 in the atmosphere is indeed driving our climate changes. So what does the science say about this?
Tom, it's an accepted scientific fact, really, that atmospheric CO2 levels and global temperature are linked. You have ice cores that go back 800,000 years. Additional data like petrified tree rings goes back 3 million years, and they all tell the same climate story. When atmospheric CO2 rises, so do global temperatures. This year, climate scientists are watching CO2 levels rise at the fastest rate on record, about 3 parts per million per year. So I asked University of St. Thomas climate expert Dr. John Abraham about the rapid rises in CO2 and what that means.
Well, it really is eye-opening when we add this much carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. And we should make it clear to people that we know that carbon dioxide is rising every year. We're right now at about 410 parts per million of the atmosphere. Now, that may not sound like much, but it's actually about 43% higher than before the Industrial Revolution. So humans have added 43% of all the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And what you're talking about, Paul, is the rate of rise. Not only is it rising, but it's rising at a faster rate. So it appears that the amount that we're adding to the atmosphere is accelerating. And that's worrisome, because what we need to do is go in the opposite direction and reduce our carbon emissions.
You mentioned 400 parts per million, John. We passed that level a couple years ago. Looks like we're there for good now. Why is that critically important compared to where we were pre-industrial in terms of Earth's temperature?
What we want to know is, where is the climate going to be in the future? I mean, I want to know in 10, 20, 30, or 50 years, what's the climate going to look like? Because once you know that, you can plan. And one of the things scientists want to do is avoid what are called tipping points. That's when the environment gets out of our control. An example of a tipping point would be, let's say, the West Antarctic ice shelf collapsed. Mm-hmm. Another example would be, let's say, we get methane released from tundra regions, let's say, in Siberia. Then we would sort of lose control of the climate. Well, it turns out that scientists are making expert judgments. What would it take to stay below the carbon emissions and concentrations to avoid tipping points? And we think that some of those tipping points exist between 350 and 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide. So we really want to be below 400 and preferably below 350. And of course, we're going to hit about 410 this year, so we're going in the wrong direction.
What's the big picture overall on global CO2 emission trend lines? I know it has stabilized in terms of how much CO2 we're putting into the atmosphere in the last couple of years. Is that trend continuing going forward?
It may be. If you would have asked me this last year, I would have painted a pretty darn rosy picture, because we had a situation where many countries were acting together to really take important action to reduce emissions. And especially in the United States, we had the Clean Coal Power Plan, we had increased emissions on vehicles, and we had a bunch of other international agreements where we were actually reducing our emissions, and other countries were following suit. Now the question is, with the new administration that takes climate change much less seriously, will those actions continue? And right now, they're looking less likely they'll continue. So what that means is we anticipate the rates of increase will go back up. But, of course, this is the future and things can change, but that's where it looks today.
And you mentioned the new administration, John. This caught my eye this week, ProPublica reporting that Secretary of Defense James Mattis had asserted that climate change is real and a threat to American interests abroad and the Pentagon's assets everywhere. You and I have talked about climate change before as a threat multiplier. Is Mattis a realist in what seems to be an administration that rejects climate science?
Well, he's got the conservative chops to be a realist. And look, the Department of Defense is very good at assessing risk. What are the things that are happening now or in the future that can cause risk to our national security? And that's what they're great at. And they have identified climate change as one of the biggest risks in the future for our country. And it's a risk for a variety of different reasons, but we're already seeing the geopolitical instabilities around the world that threaten us. And so, you know, he represents the Department of Defense. He's one point in a long line of people from that part of government who have talked about this. So I hope that they do get some listening ears in the administration. And I do hope that he is a realist because, you know, the issues that we can or the solutions that we can come forward to solve the Department of Defense problems and make him happy are the same things that we can do to solve our own environmental and energy problems. So I'm very hopeful about his positions.
I think a lot of climate watchers are thinking this, John. You know, what's the reality of a Trump administration overall, the real sort of effect on emissions? You can't change greenhouse emissions on a dime, right? So, you know, big picture, how much damage to the atmosphere can one administration do in 4 years?
Fantastic question. I've got some hope and I've got some real concern. I'll start out with the real concern. The biggest concern in my mind is that the administration is going to cut funding for climate research. We have NASA, we have the Environmental Protection Agency, and we have NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and other groups that are studying the climate. And there's a real concern within those organizations that climate funding will be cut, which means things that we need, like satellites and buoys in the oceans and ships, all of the instruments that we need will disappear. And if that happens, we'll be flying blind. And then it'll be really, really hard to plan and prepare our cities and our country to handle the coming climate change. So that's the scary part. It's cutting the climate funding. But the positive thing is clean energy solutions are starting to win on economic grounds alone, especially wind and solar power. Their costs have come down so dramatically over the past 3 decades that they can now outcompete coal, oil, and natural gas. And so the long-term trend in these energies are, I think, pretty strongly tilted toward clean and renewable energies. Their costs will continue to come down. But the worry we've got is we won't really understand the climate because the budgets for the important monitoring systems have been cut.
That's Dr. John Abraham. He's a climate science expert and professor at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. And, you know, Tom, when I give talks about climate change, the content can be pretty sobering to the audiences. But the boom in renewables that John touched on, definitely a ray of good news going forward.
Now, other climate news today we should touch on, and we are learning more about the accuracy of past climate models. How accurate were they? What are we learning?
Yeah, this one's pretty cool, Tom. Published in Forbes yesterday, it turns out that one of the earliest climate models published 50 years ago was dead on accurate for what's happening in our atmosphere today. The paper was published in 1967. And it was published, and get the title of this, Thermal Equilibrium of the Atmosphere with a Given Distribution of Relative Humidity. There's a great title.
Oh, there you go.
But here's what it said 50 years ago. According to our estimate, a doubling of CO2 in the atmosphere has the effect of raising the temperature of the atmosphere about 2 degrees Celsius. Now, Tom, what we've measured so far from pre-industrial until today matches that extremely well. We've increased CO2 in the atmosphere by about 50%, and temperatures going back to pre-industrial will have increased by about 1 degree. So that's right on the projection of that paper 50 years ago. It's also pretty strong evidence that today's climate models that project 50 years into the future are also likely to be accurate.
All right, fascinating stuff. Paul Huttner, thank you for bringing us ClimateCast. It is our weekly look at the science of climate change, and you can catch it here every Thursday at this time here on All Things Considered. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Tom.